This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Do anybody want to get a competitive game in the Heat Miami, the Miami Heat Boston Celtics series? Does anybody want to play a game that is tight, comes down to the wire? Maybe a buzzer beater. I don't even care if it's a buzzer beater. What I'm really curious about is, can we actually have a seven-game series where every single game is a dominant performance by whoever wins the game? Because I feel like that's what we're getting at in this series so far. Once again, the Celtics responded after a playoff loss with a win. And not just a win, a dominating win. That's the best way to put it. They win 102-82. That's a 20-point victory. It wasn't even that close, right? Miami didn't score a field goal until 3 minutes and 36 seconds that were left in the first quarter. The Celtics had an 18-1 lead. Now, this is one of those kind of games that if you're just a casual fan, you're not a Celtics fan, not a Heat fan, you're just like, I like basketball. I'll watch basketball on my Monday night. You'll watch the first quarter and go, what else could I watch? What else is on the TV? Is there something else I could, you know, you start looking around. Maybe there's baseball. Maybe there's hockey. Maybe there's Better Call Saul on AMC. Something along those lines. Because there is, and then there's also that moment where you may switch to something else and then go, but man, what if Miami comes back in that game? What will it look like? What will it feel like if they do? Well, they didn't. So it doesn't really matter. But I understand your thinking there because I actually thought the same thing. When the Celtics were up 18-1 and they were rolling through and everything was clicking for them, and defensively without Marcus Smart, they were you know, doing whatever they wanted to, holding Miami down. None of the starters stepped up for the Heat. But there was a moment where I thought, well, what if somewhere in this game the shots do start falling for Miami and they claw their way back into this thing and then they win this game and they steal this game? Remember, you know, Milwaukee did this to them. It wasn't as bad in terms of a blowout, but remember, Milwaukee overcame a double-digit deficit in the final 2 minutes of a game against the Celtics in the fourth quarter. So it didn't happen, but it does go to show you that this series might be a seven-game absolute thriller, except the games are one-sided. Whereas, at least in the Dallas Golden State series, one team is saying, yeah, we'll be done with this pretty soon. All right, we'll talk about this game last night. We'll look ahead to the Dallas Warriors game 4, if the Mavericks have anything. It's Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along on SportsMap Radio. We'll get to the game last night. Not much of a game, but it is now an even series at two games apiece. The Celtics win by 20, 102-82. They routed Miami, and again, this is just a bizarre series. I don't know how else to put it. Look, I'm sure if I went through the history of the NBA, I could find series like this where, you know, it's one team doing something fantastic and excellent and the other team struggling, and then the reverse the next game, and then it goes back the way, you know, in game one mirrors game three, and game four mirrors game two. But the reality is I can't really remember it off the top of my head. This series is every single game is about one of the teams and the other team just failing miserably to try to maintain a competitive edge. And this, by the way, this is what the Celtics do. When they lose a playoff game, they come back and win the playoff game. They've done that in this entire postseason. They are that resilient. But what happened last night, especially in the first quarter, find me a game where you'll see that. Like, literally, no field goals for the Heat for nearly 9 minutes of basketball. The opening 9 minutes, they didn't score until like 3:30 in the first quarter. They didn't score a bucket until they finally knocked down a three. It was, I mean, when are you going to see that? But it was that moment that you realize, oh, here we go again. We've done this again. So we'll get into that game. And then tonight, Golden State has a chance to get to the NBA Finals. We talked a lot about this yesterday. For the sixth time in the past 8 years, they just need a win in the next four games against the Dallas Mavericks. Very likely to get it tonight. Ron, guess what's going on in the Houston area tonight? A big, big deal. This is when I wished I was in your city.
Oh, please let me know, because I have no idea.
Facing Nolan, the ultimate Nolan Ryan documentary, yes, is going to be on theaters all over the Houston area tonight for one night only. So you can go to the theater and see this outstanding documentary on Nolan Ryan, where you're going to have interviews from players who have faced Nolan Ryan, talking about his career, not only with the Astros in the 1980s, but with the Mets and the Rangers and the Angels, the full career of Nolan Ryan. 20 years. Remember when he battled Robin Ventura, who was 20 years younger than him?
Yes.
It was one of the most iconic photographs in sports history.
It still is.
It still is. It still is. So tonight, again, all over Houston, in theaters all over the city, you can watch the documentary Facing Nolan, which I would tell you I would love. I love sports documentaries. It's my thing, especially good ones, and I've heard nothing but great things about this. And plus, it's got a nice almost two-hour runtime. So imagine all the details that you will know on the life of Nolan Ryan. So that's going on all throughout the city of Houston tonight. So
yeah, every time it's fun, because every time I drive down to, if we go down to Padre Island,
yeah,
to get to the real good beaches in Texas, you pass through this little town called, it's called Refugio, I think. I could be pronouncing it wrong because it's spelled, Texas has this thing where they spell it one way and then you say it a different way.
Right.
With a bunch of things. But it's his, it's like where he was born.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, huge billboard. I mean, come on, that's a proud, proud son of that town. And it's a small town, too. But it's so much fun. You just go in there, and, I always have fun just going on, telling my kids, you know how good Nolan Ryan was?
Oh, my God. How many no-hitters did he have during his career? Six or seven? Even when he was an older, sort of aging veteran, he still threw.
And that was the thing, right? I mean, still dominant, way past his prime.
Yeah, when you normally see a pitcher start losing a little bit of their fastball, and they got to go to other pitches to be sort of effective,
yep.
Nolan Ryan was still bringing the heat even at an older age and was still mowing down people.
He could probably do it today.
Probably.
I'm not going to doubt Nolan.
Nolan Ryan. Exactly. So again, Facing Nolan in theaters all around the Houston area. All right. So again, as I said at the top of the hour, I mean, some of you probably stuck with the game last night because what the heck, right? But some of you probably turned it on, said, all right, let me watch some basketball. And it really didn't get much basketball other than the Celtics racing out to a big lead. And then maybe you found something else to watch. It was a lot of it Major League Baseball games going on. There was a couple of Stanley Cup playoff games that were going on. Because again, once again in this series, this game was not competitive. This is the fourth time now that we have really gotten a competitive game. And to me, I think that does make this series a little bit interesting because, again, this looks like it's going seven games, right? Now, again, that could change. We're going down to South Florida for game five on Wednesday night. Whoever wins that game is going to be in a position to eliminate the other team in game six. Okay, so you never know how that works out, how teams face elimination games, how they perform in elimination games. But the Celtics have been fantastic in games after they have lost. They're just not fantastic in games after they have won so far in this series. But, man, you beat them. They come back the next night or the next game, and they take you down. Now, don't get me wrong. The series between Golden State and Dallas hasn't been very competitive at all. But, I mean, I go back to game two, though, in that series on Friday night. I thought Dallas played particularly well. I just think in the end they just don't have the team as capable of beating Golden State. I was talking about that yesterday. This one, I said yesterday, and this proved the point. I have no idea where this series is going. I mean, if you had told me, hey, Boston's going to win game four, I would have been like, yeah, well, sure, why not? Why wouldn't they win game four, right? They've done a pretty good job in resiliency. But if you were to say to me, well, Miami's going to miss the first 14 shots that they take in the game, I would say, well, I don't know about that. But that's what happened. Again, they didn't score until I think it was 3:34 of the first quarter is when they knocked down the first. I think it was Victor Oladipo knocking down a three. That's an incredible amount of time to go in an NBA game without scoring a bucket. And that's how the game opened up. But I also can see some people saying, you know, I wonder if Boston blows this. Like, does Boston screw this up? I mean, it was 57-33 at halftime. Jeez. I mean, it's 24 points. I mean, it's like, again, I don't blame any of you if you found something else to kind of watch. I mean, even if you're not even a huge hockey fan, maybe the Avalanche Blues series was more compelling than this basketball game.
I mean, this does beg the question, is this a good series?
Yeah, is it a good series? That's a great question. Is it a good series?
I mean, is it entertaining? I mean, we can already assume what's going to happen in Game 5, right?
Yeah.
So do we watch it?
So, well, that's the thing, right? Like, if it happens in Game 5, now we're really talking about what exactly is going on here. Look, I mean, it's one thing for the Celtics to feel like their backs were against the wall. Yeah, of course, they're down 2-1, and they don't want to lose the Game 4 at home. Because if they're down 3-1 going down to Miami, that's not where you want to be. So was there an elimination feel? No, but was there an urgency? Of course, right? But that? Again, how often do you say a 20-point victory is not really indicative of how dominating a team was? Right? I mean, yeah, most of the time when you get a 20-point win or something at 20, it's like, well, we pulled our starters in the fourth quarter. They scored 30. We scored, 18. They tightened up the game. That's kind of what happened here. But it's not even close to giving you the level of dominance by the Celtics. And they did it without Marcus Smart. That was the most incredible thing. They did that without the Defensive Player of the Year. Right? And they did it with Jaylen Brown having a miserable game. He was terrible. And they still did this to this Miami Heat team. Now, some of this for Miami is going to be self-inflicted. Right? They just shot poorly, 33% from the floor. But a lot of this is just going to be on Boston and the fact that they, again, went out there and got it done. And they got Al Horford came in and had a number of blocks. Robert Williams, of course, had a couple of blocks. Brown was only had 12 points, was 5 of 20 from the floor. I mean, he might as well have worn a Heat jersey. He played so badly. He shot so poorly. He might as well have joined the club over there. But again, look at not one starter for Miami last night was in double figures. Not one. Oladipo off the bench led the team with 23. Right? But Jimmy Butler had 6 points in 27 minutes, 3 for 14. Right? There were 14 of 36 from the three-point line. Much of that came in the second half. Much of that also came from players off the bench. I mean, ugh. I mean, it was one of the worst displays of basketball by a starting five I've ever seen in the postseason. I mean, they scored 18 points. The starting five scored 18 points. Find me another game in the playoffs, in the history of the playoffs, that had that sort of line score, box score. I mean, it's abysmal. But what does that mean? Nothing. It means nothing. Because it's never meant anything in this entire series. Nothing has meant anything in this entire series in terms of lasting effect. Everybody that's making some sort of prediction on this needs to just stop and just let these teams play basketball. Well, if Jimmy Butler continues to play like this, like he did in Game 1 where he scored 41 points, the Celtics are in trouble. And then Boston wins Game 2. If Miami can't find anything else, any other way to help Jimmy Butler, the Heat are in trouble. They go to Boston, Miami wins Game 3. I don't know, the Celtics, if they can't figure out a way to stop Miami, and they're different role players, they're going to be in trouble. Then Boston wins this game. I mean, if Boston can win this game with Marcus Smart out and that kind of defensive effort and hold Miami to 33% shooting, the Heat are in trouble. And now we get to go to Game 5 on Wednesday night and see what happens. There's nothing consistent about this. Not one thing from any game has led into the next game. There's no momentum. There's no matchup changes that have mattered. What we have seen, basically in a nutshell, in one sentence, what we have seen is Boston responding every time they've lost. That's it. That's it. That's the only thing we've seen in this series that is consistent. Right? Miami wins. Boston responds with the victory. They've done it twice now in a 4-game series. Now it's a best 2 out of 3. Miami will probably come back in Game 5 and shoot 60% from the floor. I don't know. And I'm not, and again, what part of my job on this is to analyze games, but also to give you an idea of where I think the series is going, and I'm totally befuddled. Because, again, to see the Celtics team, I mean, it's, and again, don't get me wrong, the Celtics, they're the top defensive team in the NBA, and it's not just because Marcus Smart. It's not like Marcus Smart and a bunch of guys that don't play defense. Everybody contributes in the defensive end. Everybody does things defensively. This is, it's a very tough unit. So when I say it's incredible that they did this with Marcus Smart, it's not really, because a lot of the guys on this team really do know how to play defense. And Robert Williams coming back to the Celtics lineup has obviously made a huge difference in terms of that as well. But again, this is a team that had 11 blocks. 11 blocks. Right? And just shut this Miami team down. Now, as I've told you guys a couple of times in the playoffs, you see this a lot in the regular season, right? Let's say you got Golden State, and Golden State's riding a 9-game win streak, and they're on a road trip, and they go to Charlotte, and they lose 129-87, and people go, "Oh my God, what happened? Oh." They had won 7 in a row, and how did they lose by 37 points or whatever it is, right? Because a lot of times in the NBA, especially in the regular season, you just go, that's it. We're done. We're finished. Yeah, not going to work. No need to work out trying to get back into this one. Save our resources because we got to go to Atlanta, right? We're going to continue the trip to Atlanta, so we might as well regroup Friday night. Happens all the time. And then you put role players in. And so the team that's leading puts in their bench, and you got guys who never play, and they want to score, they want to contribute in their own, for their own personal reasons. So the game sort of gets out of hand. So in the postseason, it's not uncommon to see games like that where a team goes, "That's it, we're done, we have nothing." We've seen it a couple of times already in these playoffs. The biggest one that I can remember is when Memphis just blew out Golden State, game 5, just blew them out. And Draymond Green was dancing, and because he knew what most of us know, is that doesn't matter what the final score is, it's not indicative of anything else. But this game last night, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like Miami played well, and then sort of in the end, the game got away from them, and then they went, "Okay, look, we're down 26 in the fourth quarter. Yeah, we'll do something, but let's not go all out here. I mean, let's just get out of here healthy and let's get ready for the next game and let's reset." Miami, right from the second the game started, they were terrible. Right from the second. So, again, there's nothing to take away out of this game that leads us into anything into game 5. But coming up, we got game 4, Western Conference Finals. We'll talk about that next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. So tonight, game 4, Golden State and Dallas, with a chance for the Warriors to just push aside the pesky Mavs and go on to a 4-game sweep and head to the NBA Finals. I would not be surprised if Dallas wins this game tonight. They have not had anything that gives me any indication that they can beat the Warriors. Warriors are just too strong. But I don't know. Like, there's something about desperate teams. Like, there's always, like, one more in the chamber, if you will. There's always, like, one game where they go, "All right, we're not going down in a sweep. All right, we may not win this series, but we're not going to get swept." So I got to think there's one more just game in Dallas where they go, "All right, we'll pack up the equipment truck and head to San Francisco. They want to beat us there, fine, but we're going to win this one here." So I wouldn't be surprised. But then again, it's just a matter of time, isn't it? For Golden State to go to the NBA Finals once again. I was really thinking about that yesterday after our show, where we were like 6 and 8 years. That is for modern NBA, that's really impressive.
Yeah, that's why I don't like that thing that you're, you know, that's going around the talking heads of, are we starting to see a new dynasty?
Yeah.
I don't think the old dynasty ever really died out.
Yeah, I know, right?
Because it was injuries that, prevented them from being who they are.
Yeah, like we don't talk about that with the Patriots. There was a period of time when the Patriots weren't going to Super Bowls, but we don't say like the Patriots were dominant for 20 years, except for this period of time between Super Bowls, you know, this, this, and this. Like we don't talk about that because, you know, they were in the playoffs. In the NBA, I think 2020 sort of becomes like, yuck. You know, it was a weird situation. They had to cut the season short. Then they invited these teams into a bubble. Golden State was hurt. And then they were hurt again. And last year, they were in the same boat. They were still healing up from their injuries. Klay Thompson was coming, you know, starting to, you know, rehab. And now that they're healthy, they're back to where they are. They've been. So, yeah, it's a little two-year dip. But, look, and don't get me wrong, I understand, like when people say, well, you in modern NBA, you know, 6 out of 8 years is impressive, but the NBA has had chunks of time where one team has pretty much been, you know, been a huge presence. Yeah, I get it. LeBron James, if you just want to call him an NBA team, went to what, 10 straight conference NBA finals? Before the, I think it was 10 straight, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe 9, because 2020 he won the championship, but the year before he was with the Lakers and they didn't do anything his first year in Los Angeles before they got Anthony Davis. But a good period of stretch of time for a decade, LeBron was in every single NBA finals. But I think as a team, as an organization, you know, this is remarkable. I mean, it really is remarkable. I mean, when you think about, again, we talked about this yesterday, the different teams that have risen and fallen over the years, like teams that have been doormats to then top of the conference, to teams that have been top of the conference to middle of the road now, teams that have been top of the conference to just completely disappearing. Like they've survived every single new challenge. They're not playing sort of the same teams. There's been a new blood in that's come into the Western Conference. Denver used to be not very good. Now they're, you know, they got a 2-time MVP in Nikola Jokic. Houston used to be fantastic. In fact, I'm still amazed Houston did not get to one NBA final during the time that they were running and gunning and James Harden and everybody was just pouring it on. But nope, they didn't. Golden State had to fight through that. Now Houston is filled with young players and rookies and will have the number 2 pick in the draft coming up. So they have gone back and forth so many times with different teams, and yet they still maintain a level of play that has been stellar. I mean, absolutely stellar. Their season this year, I bought into them again. Don't get me wrong, but I always went, yeah, but we'll see. Like I kind of hedged my bet a little bit on Golden State. I liked Phoenix a lot going into the playoffs. I really did. I liked Phoenix a lot. I liked Memphis. I thought Memphis was a good team. I thought it was weird, again, that statistic of the team and their record without Ja Morant. And I was like, and then with Ja Morant, they're just, you know, they're really great. For me, to see Golden State one game away from just a sweep in the Western Conference Finals against a very good Dallas team, but not good enough. That's the weird thing. Are we going to say that about the loser of the Eastern Conference Finals? Like, whoever loses that game, I mean, that's a 1-2 matchup. I get it might be a little different because this is a 3-4 matchup in terms of seeding. But are we going to say, well, you know, Miami or Boston, you could tell they were just deficient. No, I mean, they just got beaten in a series. But this is, Golden State is showing everybody, like, did you like Dallas a lot? Yes, I did. Did you like them a lot? Yeah, I kind of did. Well, here's why you shouldn't have. And you go, oh, you know what? Yep, I understand what you're saying there. I understand what you're doing. They really need some additional players around Luka. The series in Phoenix was a little eye-opening because the first two games, they didn't get any help for Luka. Luka didn't have any help at all. He was doing it all by himself. He averaged 40 points in the two games and the two losses in Arizona. But now it's like, even if they got help for Luka, it's not enough to beat Golden State. It's just not enough. That they're that good. They're that separate than a team that made the Western Conference Finals. But in the East, doesn't matter who comes out of it, the other team is just as worthy. So, all right, we continue along. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. We'll get into some NFL news coming up next as we'll continue on your Tuesday. Glad you could be with us.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Thanks to Robert on Facebook. It said Dallas wins game four for the gentleman's sweep. Yeah, that's a good. That's the terminology I was thinking of. Right, where you have a team down 3-0 and then they win game four, and then the series is closed out in game five, the gentleman's sweep. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate that one. You hit this up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. I want to say last night, so I was watching that game and it got it, you know, I went in and out of that game for a bit. I watched it, then I was watching Colorado St. Louis, the NHL game, because I wanted to see Nazem Kadri of the Avalanche to see what, you know, because hockey, we talked about this yesterday. He crashed into Jordan Binghamton on a loose puck. Binghamton is the goaltender for the St. Louis Blues. Binghamton suffered a lower body injury, and now he's out for the entire playoffs, this series and the entire playoffs. So Blues fans got very upset, and he was the victim of a lot of death threats that were sent his way, so much so that authorities had to come in and investigate it and provide additional security at the team hotel and the entrance of the arena. And I have to say, every time you hear a story like this where a player is facing a death threat or some, you know, whatever it may be that involves like an extra level, like it's not just a casual, yeah, I received death threats. It's like wait a minute, like we're actually going to get police involved in this. He scored a hat trick last night and the Avalanche won the game and are one win away from the conference finals. He answered all of that with his first ever playoff hat trick. I got to be honest with you. I'm pulling a little bit for Colorado, but I got a lot of friends who are St. Louis Blues fans. But that's pretty remarkable. It's pretty remarkable. And the series goes back to Denver for game five. Avalanche are up 3-1. They did go after him. There was David Perron of the Blues hit him and drove him down into the ice, was on top of him. So he was cross-checked pretty hard. Again, a little bit of a retaliation for what happened to Jordan Binghamton. Said this yesterday, I don't think he had an intent to take out the goaltender. I know the coach, Craig Berube of the St. Louis Blues, had said, look at his reputation, because he was suspended for a hit in their series last year in the playoffs when the Avalanche and the Blues met. So he said, look at his history. It speaks for itself. But I honestly, I mean, seeing the replay of that, I don't think there was an intention of sliding into the goaltender to injure him. What I think, and again, I don't know the mindset. I don't know what's going on in the head. It's just my observation. What I thought of at the time was he was going after the loose puck and just did not care that the goaltender was going to be there. Just said, look, I'm going after this loose puck, and if I slide into the goaltender, I slide into the goaltender, and if he gets hurt, he gets hurt. This is hockey, and this is the way I'm playing it, and that's just the way it's going to be. So, nevertheless, that's my thought. But it was just, again, we talk about sports sometimes being written in like a story sometimes. We say this a lot in sports. You can't make it up, right? Like someone does something remarkable under certain circumstances, and you're like, you know, sports is great theater, and this is great theater. I mean, if you were to write a Disney movie about, you know, Nadim Kadri, would you include a hat trick in a game in which he needed extra security at the hotel and the entrance because he was getting death threats? And good for him too. The one thing that he kept saying over and over again, and in talking about it, because he said, look, yeah, I you know, Craig Berube's comments gave me some extra fire. But one thing he did do, and he did it a few times, was he sort of reminded the interviewer and sort of the crowd or the audience, the TV audience, that he wasn't painting St. Louis in this sort of broad brush. He did not say that, you know, hey, everybody in St. Louis is like this. He made it clear not everybody in St. Louis is like this. He knows that a lot of people in St. Louis don't feel that way about him, because he's not only was getting death threats. He was also getting racist sort of taunts and whatnot. But none came down from the rafters at the game. He did not hear any directed at him from the fans during the game. He just got them through social media and whatnot. And he said he felt sorry for those people. But he really did make a point to say, hey, listen, that's not everybody here in St. Louis. This is a good town. This is a good city. That's not the way everybody thinks. But he scored a hat trick. And the Avalanche go on to win. So, they lead that series. The Avs haven't been to the Western Conference Finals since 2002 when they lost to Detroit. So they're one win away from making a return trip in 20 years. All right, NFL news. I want to get to it. So you know how Hard Knocks has its summer show? And this year, HBO is going to have the Detroit Lions, which we're actually excited about.
Yeah.
Because I think it gives us a little bit more Dan Campbell exposure, which I think is good. I like Dan Campbell a lot. We like Dan Campbell a lot.
And we feel like this team has something. Like they're actually building
yeah.
something.
Yeah, like it seems like it would be
it's
very
interesting.
Not like
what it's been in the past.
Yeah, like sometimes these Hard Knocks are hit and misses, right? Like yeah. not every season is an award-winning epic that gives you details. Like, hey, the Raiders one was really compelling because Antonio Brown was in it, pretty heavily in it.
Cleveland Browns one gave us Coach Wiley.
Yeah. That's right, Coach Wiley. And stretching, whoever stretches, right? Men have fought wars without stretching. I like that. But some of them are dead. Some of them, I never got really anything out of it. Forgettable, very forgettable. They've done a bunch of these. So then they started this. Did they start this last year or the
yeah,
year before where they've done this
the in-season
one? I think it was last year was the first time they did it. But if you tell me it was 2 years ago, I'd believe you because I didn't watch last season and I wouldn't have known if 2020 had one as well. I don't think 2020 would have had one. I don't think they would have said, hey, we're going to heavy COVID restrictions this season to try to get the, why don't we just throw a camera crew in with the very, separated locker room. So last season they followed the Indianapolis Colts and they gave you sort of an in season Hard Knocks and I didn't see any of it. I wish I kind of did. I heard there was some of it was pretty dramatic, but yeah, I don't know. But this season, that is going to be the Arizona Cardinals. Now,
which I mean, on the surface, seems way more enticing,
right? Because of what's going on with this team in this off season with Kyler Murray. Now, Kyler Murray is not attending OTAs. That's not that big of a deal. Like, on the surface, that's not a big story. A lot of veterans don't go to the OTA, which is voluntary. Some do, some don't. Kyler Murray isn't. But right now, Kyler Murray is sort of in this sort of, hey, when are you going to sign me to the big deal? Like, when are we going to get that thing done? And remember, his agent was writing letters and sending it to the media, and there was this disconnection between the quarterback and the team. And, oh, no, it's all better. Not really. Like, again, don't look at the OTA absence as maybe reading anything more than a veteran saying, I ain't going to OTAs. Because he's totally in his right to not go to OTAs. They're voluntary. It's not that big of a deal. You know, a couple of quarterbacks aren't going to their OTAs. But I think that his current situation with his team does add some compelling element to it, without question. And now we'll see, how the season goes. Now, in all due respect, if they get a deal done, will the season be compelling or will it be more compelling watching Kyler Murray try to prove that he's a $50 million a year quarterback? Because I got to think that, if a deal is done, it loses a little bit of its luster. But I'm kind of curious because Cliff Kingsbury, this will be a good look at inside his little coaching world, how he manages everything, how he's put this team together. So if you're into that kind of thing, Arizona is going to be the in-season documentary for Hard Knocks. And by the way, when I read up on this, once again, they're pointing to Drive to Survive on Netflix and showing the popularity of Formula One in the United States based on this documentary. Documentaries have a tendency to do that. But I always warn people, be careful of documentaries. I know, like, first of all, Hard Knocks I don't think Hard Knocks is a direct correlation to the popularity of the NFL. All right? I don't think people are more into the NFL because what they see on Hard Knocks. If you do a documentary series that's compelling and it's got some good narratives and some conflict and some drama and something people aren't familiar with, they might become fans of that, right? So, like, let's say, for example, Ron and I have said this many times, we don't know anything about cricket, But let's say there was a documentary on cricket, and we were like, let's watch it. It seems like it's interesting. And then we found it interesting. Maybe we'll stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning and watch cricket matches from wherever. But the NFL, I don't think, is drawing new fans from Hard Knocks. I think it's an added bonus to have Hard Knocks. I think it's something, it's programming that you can have success with because of the popularity of the sport, right? Hard Knocks, in and of itself, is something that is worthwhile having because the NFL is popular. So you take something that's already popular, you do a documentary series on that popularity or on that thing, and you jump on the popularity of it, not the other way around, right? Drive to Survive comes on Netflix. People are like, wow, look, race car drivers in daring situations where they risk their lives, and mothers saying how they, you know, praying to God every single Sunday that their son survives. Let me watch this. And then they watch it and they see the drama behind it. And they see the sport. They see the excitement of the sport. And they go, oh, okay, I'll get up and watch a Grand Prix or whatever it is. That's not the case. How many people do you know went, you know, I wasn't a big football fan, and then I was tooling around HBO watching John Oliver, and they had this ad for the show called Hard Knocks, and I watched it, and I went, wow, what is this NFL thing on Sundays? I think I'll watch it. I don't think you're finding people like that. I do think what you're seeing is it's almost serving an existing audience, right? You're an NFL fan, right? The Detroit Lions are on Hard Knocks. Dan Campbell's kind of interesting. The team is rebuilding. That's kind of interesting. Here you go. And that's where you take it. Arizona. This was a team that at one point had the best record in the NFL, and then they sort of fell apart a little bit, and their quarterback is having outs with the ownership. All right, well, let's put them in the in-game series and the in-season series, and let's see what else we can dial up. But man, you got to be careful of documentaries too, because they're always sided towards the drama. They're always sided towards developing controversy, right? And I think, for a lot of us who are of a certain age, the first time we really experienced reality television was The Real World on MTV. And that series absolutely tried to provoke its cast into some sort of controversy and drama so that they could capture it. Because filming seven strangers in a loft in New York City, it was going to be boring if everybody just went their own separate ways and went to work every single day and maybe argued who ate the Kraft macaroni and cheese that I bought from the store the day before. That's not really going to be that interesting. But if you get, you know, two characters on the street arguing about race relations, or you get two people in the loft arguing about homosexuality, then it becomes drama and the cameras are on it, and then it becomes more interesting. The NFL versions of that is conflicts within management, conflicts between players and coaches, conflicts between rules in the team and players that you grow to like getting cut, or fights in certain camps or whatever it may be. That's the drama that they bring you in Hard Knocks. So I don't know how much they can get from Kyler Murray's contract dispute with the Arizona Cardinals if it's been settled in the in-season. Now, if it hasn't been, and they go, young man, you're playing on your fourth year of your rookie deal, go get it, then that becomes really interesting. That kind of can become really interesting, especially if there's an openness on Kyler Murray's part to partake in this, right? I'm telling you, going back to the Drive to Survive series on Netflix, one of the problems that it has is it played with fire too much. And that what it did was it took things and made it so dramatic and made relationships so rocky, quote unquote, that drivers were like, I don't know if I want to participate in this. They asked me some questions and they totally misused those answers. And the leading driver in Formula One, Max Verstappen, the world champion, doesn't want to participate in it at all. So he doesn't speak to them. He doesn't sit down with them. He doesn't interview with them. He doesn't do anything. And other drivers are like, I think we'll do the same thing. So that may be on its way out. Hard Knocks will be around as long as the NFL goes, yeah, we're doing this. So get used to it. So here you go. Yeah, you go follow the whoever, because they're going to be there for you with open arms. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue Sports Map Radio. Hey, you know what happened in Major League Baseball last night, which has got to be really cool?
What's that?
a walk-off grand slam.
Oh, God, that would be
Paul
fun.
Goldschmidt of the St. Louis Cardinals hit a walk-off grand slam last night as the St. Louis Cardinals beat the Toronto Blue Jays 7-3.
Oof.
Imagine a walk-off grand slam.
I'm glad he finished it. I remember this was years ago. I want to say maybe it was Robin Ventura, second time we're mentioning him on the show today.
Yes.
Had a walk-off grand slam single.
Yes, because he got because if I'm not mistaken, right, was this a playoff game?
I think so.
Because he got to first base and they just mobbed him, and then he never went around finished. The bases. He never finished.
Yeah.
So once the first run crossed, that was it. But
so at least the Cardinals let Paul run all the bases.
Yeah. The cool thing about it is you got to think that a walk off home run is got to be fantastic. A walk off grand slam is what, four times better than that?
It has to be.
It's got to feel like to get a grand slam at any moment of any time in a game, even if you're trailing 11-0,
right,
it's still got to be pretty cool, right? Because how many career grand slams do people have? Not a lot.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, for one of those in your short list of career grand slams to be a walk-off grand slam, it's got to be fantastic.
I mean, honestly, like, you know, as a player, the coaches are probably yelling at you too. The manager's saying, like, hey, all we need is a simple base hit.
I know. That's the other thing, right? It's in the bottom of the inning,
yep,
and your bases are loaded, and you're like, look, just put it in play. Put it in play. We get the run home. And you're like, nah, if I see a pitch, it's out of here.
Yeah, I'm going yard.
He's probably thinking, like, all I got to do is, hey, just send to the outfield. I don't know the details. I don't know if there was two outs or whatever. I just know it was a walk-off grand slam. When I saw that this morning, I was like, well done, Paul Goldschmidt. Former Arizona Diamondback, now St. Louis Cardinals. Hour 2 coming up, good, the bad, and the dumb as we roll along. It's Wake Up Call, Sportsman Radio.